And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is the examined life. Remember, it was Socrates who said that the unexamined life is not worth living. All three of my guests have examined aspects of their life, and they're here to tell us about it. My first guest examined our future by talking to thought leaders in science, technology, nanotechnology, and philosophy. He came away from those discussions with an optimistic point of view, and he writes about it in his latest book, The Optimist Tour of the Future. My next guest has led an extraordinary life himself. He examines his life and his experiences in his memoir, My Odyssey. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Dr. Paul Straub is a Los Angeles-based cosmetic surgeon, but he's much more than that. He's a world traveler, an adventurer, a raconteur, and bon vivant. Get this, astronaut Buzz Aldrin calls Paul the epitome of the independent, self-made man. Paul's flown around the world solo, which puts him in an elite group of only 37 people to do so. We'll discuss his latest book, My Odyssey, which recounts some of his more famous stories. Welcome to the show, Paul. How are you today?
Thank you for having me on, Bill. I never have a bad day.
I'm happy to hear that. And that's just continuing right along with our optimistic theme that we're going here today. So let's dive into it, shall we? You're a Korean War vet. You're a doctor. You're a self-made man. You're a pilot. You're really what I would call a Renaissance man. So I'm going to start with a big societal question for you. Is the rugged individualist like yourself dying in today's American culture?
Well, I think we do need more people that should be more independent. We don't want to become totally dependent upon our government. People should take care of themselves.
Yeah, I would think so, too. Now, what is it in you that sparked this whole self-reliance, this whole independent bent that you have and have exhibited all your life?
Well, Bill, all my life I've always felt that anything is possible, and when somebody would say something couldn't be done, that would always be a challenge. I'd just go ahead and do it, and most of the times. So, I had a good many, as you know, unusual adventures, and I never publicized them whatsoever. I just went about it, and I thought, well, you know, I'm not too young anymore. I'm now 39 times two. You can imagine.
Very clever.
So, and I thought I might not be around. My children had no idea that what kind of adventures I had had in my life, and I thought I better account this for my children. So I began writing, and then I found out a good many of my friends liked some of my stories too, so I just decided to publish them.
All right. Well, that explains a lot of it there. But what is it about your upbringing? You grew up in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. You obviously served in the war. You were a Korean War veteran and that sort of thing. But that rugged individualist, that independent spirit, the challenge that you mentioned earlier that you want to take on, anybody who says that you can't do something, you want to take it on, where do you think that comes from? Did it come from your parents? Did it come from your schooling? Is it just genetic in you? What do you think it is?
Well, yes, the parents were Germanic in culture, and they taught us all to be independent. And I lived through the Depression. You know, people who lived through the Depression, I think their minds are changed. They think totally different from other people. I think all those things contributed to that.
All right. So all of those factors leading up to this point here. Another kind of global question that I'd like to ask you, because you are this pilot that has flown solo around the world and a self-made man as yourself, what's the attraction between self-made men and flying or parachuting? I mean, it just seems to me more self-made men that I know either fly or parachute. What do you think that attraction is?
Well, let's see. You can be a self-made man in many other things besides adventures such as flying and parachuting. They certainly are related. By the way, I also put myself through college and medical school, paid my own way, worked my own way, and finished with no debts. The present people that do this, in general, they do that. They end up with a vast amounts, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debts when they're done.
Yes, they do. That is true. Well, what do you did this solo trip around the world. What do you experience when you fly? What is the feeling that you get? Tell us a little bit about that overall experience.
Oh, it's quite something. I bought a small airplane, $12,700, which is quite inexpensive for an airplane. I fixed it up, and then eventually I flew it seven times across the Atlantic Ocean, and then I circled the globe with it. I was the 17th person to to fly solo around the world. There have been a good many since that time that have done it. But in those days, we had no GPS, and it was done by dead reckoning. That means if you started across the Atlantic Ocean, you headed east to halfway across. Then eventually you began to pick up BBC radio, and you could one ADF. And eventually, as you got closer, it would point to the antenna, and you'd home in towards England. So it was quite an experience flying in the Pacific. Is the same way. In the Pacific, you have to look for an island in the middle of the Pacific, and it's quite an adventure to be out in the totally by yourself. I will comment on this. The longest flight I took solo by myself, or any time, was from Honolulu to Des Moines, Iowa. I flew 27 hours and 20 minutes.
Wow.
Still had 2 hours of fuel, but Chicago was the airports were closed below instrument conditions, so I landed in Des Moines, Iowa, 2 hours short of my final destination. And that, of course, is a world's record for that type of an airplane.
That's amazing. We're talking to Dr. Paul Straub, everybody. His latest book, My Odyssey, short stories from his life. And Paul, you mentioned so many different things there. I want to go back to your circumnavigating the globe and how you use navigation to find your way around the globe. I mean, it isn't as simple as you made it out to be. I mean, let's remember Amelia Earhart was lost as she was trying to make her way around the globe using dead reckoning and radio signals as well. So there's a little bit more to it. In order for you to make this trip around the globe, what did you have to learn about navigation, about finding your way, even in adverse conditions, that helped you to pilot your plane to the destinations?
Well, I had a good bit of South America 3 times crossing the ocean, but never crossing the Atlantic. And I had flown around the Caribbean islands a good bit. And you have to have a good weather forecast because you depend upon the winds. That is, if your forecaster gives you a wind that's off the degrees, and you have 3 to 4 degrees in the direction, and if it's off too much, then it pushes you to the side, and you don't hit the island.
Mm.
So it's quite an experience to do it.
No question about it. Well, you mentioned the plane that you picked up for just over $12,000, which is a bargain in airplane. In case you don't know, that's very, very inexpensive for airplanes. But tell us about your plane, because you had it especially fitted to make these trips. And what's more, the plane was not what you might call exactly legal, was it?
Oh, yes. Everything was legal. In other words, what I did was I got permission. I got permission to take off at 25% of our gross, but I went through the FDA to get that. When we crossed the Atlantic, you can go just to your local FAA office and get permission to take off at 10% of our gross. There are certain restrictions. You can have no passengers on board, and you have to stay away from certain areas. So everything was done with legal, to the contrary. Now, to fly the Pacific, I had to get permission to take off at 25% of our gross, and for that we went through the Oklahoma City Engineering Office to engineer to make sure that the plane would do that. It was done in a legal manner.
Well, I didn't mean to imply that it was illegal. I just meant to say that it was unusual and unorthodox. And for my listeners who don't know, what does it mean to be 10% above gross or 25% above gross?
Well, an airplane is designed, you calculate the fuel you're carrying and the equipment, and they know if you keep it within a certain gross weight, they know how it will fly, and it's called an envelope. You keep the load in, and then if you fly it within that envelope, that has been tested. Once you get outside of that, you're into an untested area.
All right, and they want you within that tested area so that they understand the performance characteristics of the airplane, right?
That is correct.
All right, great. Now, what did you gain, Dr. Straub, out of all of the circumnavigating the globe? I mean, what are the big takeaways that you had from that adventure?
Well, it's quite an experience, you know. I went around, and I did not publicize my adventures. When I came home, I just went back to work and didn't make any comments on it. I didn't call the newspapers and tell them I had done that. And I decided that a lot of no very few people knew, and particularly my children had no idea what I had done. There was one second interesting thing that I think that we ought to note for the listeners. The second quite unique thing was that we made the first ascent of Angels Falls in Venezuela. And that Angels Falls is the world's highest waterfall. And it's 82 feet and almost three-quarters of a mile in the first vertical drop. And it's a straight cliff, and it's overhung in time, and various good-quality mountaineers had attempted to climb it, but nobody had ever climbed the face of the falls because it's overhung near the top, and you have to go, you can't, it's not even straight vertical, it's an overhung type of thing. Three times the height of the Empire State Building, 20 times the height of Niagara Falls, and we made the first ascent of it. And quite incidentally, I was with three very experienced mountain climbing, but I was an inexperienced person. And other people had attempted it, but nobody had ever made it to the top. And that was quite unique. That was in 1971.
Wow. I mean, it was very long ago, but that's incredible. Now, I want to come back to something that you said in that answer that you just gave us, Dr. Straub, that I find pretty much incomprehensible. You said you returned from circumnavigating the world in your airplane and that your children didn't even know what you had done. How do you keep something like that secret from your family?
Oh, no, my children are not born yet. I wasn't even married then. That was before I was married. I meant that when I came, I didn't call the newspapers and make publicity. And I didn't, the children were born many years after that.
I see. Well, of course, they couldn't have known at that point. All right, we're talking to Dr. Paul Straub, everybody, his book, My Odyssey. Now, looking back on that adventure going around the world, what would you do differently, Paul, if you had to do it all over again?
Not much. I listened. Other people, Bill, have asked me that, too. If one fellow said to me, what would you do different in your life if you can? And I spent the entire evening, the night, talking about, then I met him the best day, and I said, I have been really searching, and said, what would I do? He said, what would I do differently? What do I regret in my life? And I said, I cannot think of anything. I spent an evening thinking, trying to come up with an answer to that, and I did not come with an answer of something that I would do different.
All right. Well, Paul, let's turn our attention to something that our listeners can really glom onto. I mean, most of my listeners are not going to go out, buy an airplane, and circumnavigate the world. However, you do have some very interesting life lessons that you can share with us. So tell my listeners about striking a balance between work and life, because you've done it in your life that's allowed you to do so many remarkable things. Tell us about that life and work balance that you have.
Bill, my work has always been fun. I've never, ever been anything I never did anything I didn't want to do. And I have worked all my life. I start working at age 11, and I continued all my lifetime. And as far as I know, I've really never missed I never took a day off. But it's all been fun. The only reason you call it work, what I do right now, cosmetic surgery, I do it merely for the pleasure of it. I don't have to work anymore if I don't want to, but I get tremendous pleasure out of what other people call work.
Okay. Well, now, looking at your book, My Odyssey, if you flip to the back, you've got a table there of all of the different countries that you have either visited or lived in at some point, and that list totals over 70 different countries. How did you come to live here in California? I mean, of all the places that you've been, why California? Why did you choose to live in Los Angeles?
All right. I lived in Europe for 7 years, and I went to medical school in Europe, and then I returned, and I opened a medical practice in Pennsylvania to take care of my mother for as long as she lived. Eventually, when she eventually passed away, I knew even though the medical practice was booming, just overwhelming good quality practice, I didn't want to spend my lifetime in a rusting steel town. I was still a single man. So I looked all over the world. I looked at Alaska. I looked at Florida. I looked at Nevada. I looked at Hawaii. I looked at California. And I decided that California, Southern California, would match the most the best thing. And I'm glad that I did it. It was a perfect location for me.
Well, yes, it is. Now, of all of the countries that you have visited, what are some of the countries that stand out in your mind as being the most remarkable?
I've always had a good time. I've often asked, what is the best? Now, I remember I made 19 trips to Saudi Arabia. I lived for 2 years in Germany. I lived for 5 years in Belgium. And every time I went, I tried to study the people. I tried to learn the language, tried to study the people, and I really enjoyed myself everywhere I went.
No, that's great. We're talking to Dr. Paul Straub, everybody. His book, My Odyssey, short stories from his life. And Paul, as you've written the book, what did you get out of writing My Odyssey?
Well, I got a lot. Recalled some of the old experience we had, and I got a great enjoyment out of it. I didn't realize that many people have said that they enjoyed the book. By the way, it's available at Amazon.com, also Barnes & Noble, and we will be having a book signing in Manhattan Beach at Pages on February the 18th.
Just around the corner from us, yeah. Good. Now, so you got a lot of reminiscing and that sort of thing. If people like what they hear, Paul, they want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Amazon.com is the best place, and I think the best price is also for the book.
All right, that is great.
My Odyssey, Paul Straub, is what you Google for.
Yeah, all right. We've been talking to Dr. Paul Straub, author of the book My Odyssey, Short Stories from the Life of Paul Straub. Paul, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to be here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill.
Thank you.